I just woke up in a laboratory and I was naked and paralyzed on a table. And there were six people in hazmat suits around me, and then there was like a female doctor standing behind my head. And I couldn't move and I couldn't talk, and but my eyes could move. And so it's actually really hard to even talking about that because, you know, I had such bad panic.
It's okay.
I mean, I got taken to New Mexico, to New York, to Paris, to Palm Beach, to the island. I got taken to all the properties. The problem is if they release information, it's going to break people's minds. It'll bend their brains. A lot of people won't be able to handle it. So I suppose that's why they don't know what to do. Because if they release the truth, all hell will break loose.
Could you just open up by first telling people how you met Jeffrey Epstein? When and where and how did this take place?
Well, I met Jeffrey Epstein when he was in South Africa. He was with Bill Clinton and Kevin Spacey and Chris Tucker at the time. What happened is a girl approached me at a bar, and I was doing modeling at the time. It was 20 years ago, you know, and then she asked if I'd like to meet a man who's best friends with the owner of Victoria's Secret, Les Wexner. She told me that Jeffrey Epstein owned his own island in the Caribbean, and he was here with Bill Clinton, and it would be a very good idea for me to meet him because they were, you know, they scouted models. So they had a modeling casting, and I went along with my modeling book. And while they were doing the modeling casting, there were three women posing as modeling agents. They said they were from Karen Models. Their names were Sarah Kellen, Andrea Metrovich, and I think the other girl was Cindy Lopez. I'm not too sure about the third one because I just saw that she was there at the same time from the flight logs. But, you know, Sarah Kellen and Andrea Metrovich were there when I was taken there. What happened is while they were doing the modeling casting, Bill Clinton walked through the room and he said, "Hi, everyone." You know, so he witnessed the modeling casting that was being staged. And then after these three women looked at my modeling book, they told me to go through and see Epstein. So I went through and I sat opposite him and showed him my modeling book. And he said, "Right, he thinks I'll be perfect for Victoria's Secret." And then pretty much they left like that day. And then they had me there within 2 weeks. You know, his office started phoning and they arranged me a visa and all the things I needed, you know, because coming from Africa, obviously you didn't have money for a trip like that. And I even have my diary still from that year where I wrote down, you know, the things I'd need for the trip and like, you know, the money I'd need and because I didn't have money, as I said. And then they told me I wouldn't need any money. They deducted from the modeling costs when I got there. But, you know, as we all know, I was taken there and there was no modeling. I was very quickly whisked off from New York to the island.
When did it become clear to you that these people had very different intentions than just pursuing your career?
Well, what happened is we took off from Teterboro Airport because, you know, I thought I was going to be staying in New York in my own modeling apartment, and I was so excited about it, you know, I was only 20 and I thought, wow, you know. But very quickly when I arrived there, the phone rang. It was Sarah Kellen. She said, "Pack your things, we're going to the Caribbean." So I obviously assumed it was for a modeling shoot or something. You know, I didn't have money. I didn't have a phone with me. It was 2002. So things were very different back then. You know, people didn't have phones that could roam, especially not people with money. And But then so basically I got on the airplane from Teterboro Airport, and then as soon as the plane took off, he started touching me in between my legs. And the two girls who had been posing as the modeling agents, Sarah Kellen and Andrea Metrovich, were both on the airplane while it happened, and they laughed. They sat there and just laughed. And I immediately realized that my life was in danger. The first things that went through my head were like, "Oh my God, my family's never going to see me again." You know, I got a terrible, terrible fright. And then I realized I just had to do whatever they wanted to, you know, survive. And the other very frightening thing is that my name was not on that flight log. My name was on all the other flight logs, but not on that one. They were clever about it. You know what I mean? Very subtly, he made it very obvious that I had to do whatever he wanted, and he was going to, you know, use me sexually and stuff. He made that all very obvious, you know, through his, the way he touched me and the way with the situation I was in. You know, being around people like that was very, very terrifying for a young girl, you know, who didn't have a lot of money and was just like also just being caught in a horrible sort of trap, really. They were con artists, is what they were.
Where did they take you when you arrived on the island?
Well, I was put to stay in my own chalet there.
Right.
And on the wall, there was a big artwork of a woman being raped by a walrus.
Oh, wow.
And the scary thing is, yeah, I'll share it with you if you want to share it. The scary thing is that it's not really a painting. It looks more like a photograph. And the girl's lying on a glacier and she's got like ECG things here and she's being basically raped by a walrus, it looks. Yeah, and the only reason I actually took a photo of that is because there was a lizard climbing on the frame. When I was in the room, I saw a lizard climbing on the frame. And, you know, I found these cameras in the kitchen because I couldn't afford a camera. I was, you know, poor. I didn't have money. But in the kitchen, I found a few cameras in a jar, disposable cameras. So I took like three of them, you know, to take some photos while I was there. Well, I only took two that time and I took another one another time. But I just took them because I wanted to show my mum, you know, where I'd been. And
how long were you on the island this first time visiting?
The first time I was there for probably about 5 days. The other strange thing with them is they never stayed anywhere very long. They used to move very sudden. Yeah, when I was taken for these trips, I was taken for 2 weeks at a time. But we wouldn't be told, like for instance, I was in the Caribbean, then we went to Palm Beach. But I wasn't told the night before that we were going to Palm Beach. I would only be told like half an hour or an hour before, pack your things, we're going. You know what I mean? We were never told information beforehand. And also,
why do you think that was? Why do you think that was?
You know, at the time, I didn't know at the time because they used to say they used to just follow the sunshine. It's sort of like what they used to say. But, you know, now that I'm a bit older and also there's a lot more information online, it seems like they were probably carrying something in the aeroplane that needed to be transported quickly or something like that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know more information about that. But that, I mean, if I had to guess, I would say that there was something that had to be moved.
Did you interact with Ghislaine Maxwell at all?
Yes. I met her. I mean, she was there a lot of the time. I was actually very scared of her because I could see she was a very intimidating woman, you know, highly intelligent, very intimidating, you know, very well educated. And as a young person, I was just very nervous of her because also I was actually told that she was Epstein's girlfriend. So you see, being taken there and then having the man taking me and other girls in the room and then having the woman who was apparently the girlfriend there, it was really like got to one's head because it was like, what the hell's going on, you know? But the thing is, I realized later on that they definitely weren't in a relationship. I never even saw them hold hands or kiss or they weren't romantically involved. If you ask me these years later, I would say that they were very much like business partners, you know, because her father also died under mysterious circumstances. Their family also stole a lot of money from pensioners, from, you know, 36,000 pensioners in England had their money stolen from these people, you know, and the man vanished. And it's always, you know, people have always wondered where that money went and it probably went to Epstein. I mean, I don't know, but you know, it's a Mossad link between Robert Maxwell, Leslie Wexner, and Epstein. You know, apparently in the 80s they were working in Mossad together. I saw an article like that somewhere. Again, I don't know this for sure, but you know, it's things that I've been told and seen. And Epstein, Epstein told me he worked with CIA. Before I sent home, he told me he worked with CIA. And he told me that he planted drugs in a girl's apartment and had her sent to prison because she accused him of rape. And he told me he had my family's name on a list. Sorry, my dogs are scratching at the door.
It's okay.
My protection dogs, you know, in the situation.
Yeah, you need dogs, them.
Yeah.
Did you get the impression at the time that this was a sophisticated operation of some form, or is this something that you only came to realize later on upon reflection?
Well, as a young person, you know, I very much was made aware that they sort of ran the world. You know, he had pictures of himself with the Pope, pictures with Fidel Castro, They used to speak about, he used to say he was on the phone to Clinton. You know, I met him with Clinton. He said he was on the phone to George Bush. We drove past Mar-a-Lago and he told me his friend Trump owned Mar-a-Lago. He made it very clear, you know, they also used to speak about their friend Prince Andy. You know, but years ago, I didn't really know who all these people were, really. I sort of did, but not as much as we know now. You know, I was young and I just knew very much that, you know, and also he had the cameras all over the properties. He owned all these properties in different places. You know, as I've mentioned before, I saw very strange things there, you know, like a UFO. I saw him shapeshift and I had, you know, woke up in the lab. So there was just a lot of things that made me realize that these people were not people that you wanted to take on. You know, they were very, very, very dangerous and they ran the world. So I did understand their power, but I didn't understand how deep it went until...
The implications. Yeah.
Because I was very traumatized when it all happened. And then,
of course,
obviously, the years later, you know, I spent many years being traumatized from it all. But, you know, when they gave me the settlement money, I had a bit of time to sort of breathe and get well. And then I started, like, diving deeper, like, you know, looking more into, like, you know, going into the rabbit hole of what they've done. You know, I got on X and started seeing what other people had to say. And I had more time to gather information. And that's another reason why I want to speak out, because a lot of people are stuck on the hamster wheel of life, you know, 9-to-5 jobs. By the time they get home, they're exhausted. They just want to watch a movie, you know. And I've been fortunate enough to spend my 9-to-5 looking into this stuff, you know. I don't do it for money, but I did it for myself to try to find out more. And then I felt, you know, obligated to share the information. I didn't want to speak publicly about any of this because it's been a horrible, horrible thing. But I suddenly realized that I have to speak out for those who cannot speak, because I started to realize that a lot of the victims are likely no longer alive, you know. And when you go into people, your friends with Bill Clinton, Kevin Spacey, sorry to interrupt you, but, you know, they've all got their body counts. You know, Bill Clinton, they've got a body count. If you look it up online, they have 56 friends or something that have committed suicide. Like, that's very unusual, you know. And Kevin Spacey, there were accusers and three of them died within a year. So the lawsuit was...
Yeah, very suspicious.
Yeah, and things like...
Very, very suspicious.
Speak out for the people who can't speak. And that's why I do this. Even though I'm not good at it, I try.
No, you're very good at it, and it's your story. And telling your story is the only thing you can really do in the face of something like this. It's a very kind of David and Goliath style situation. And I think that there is a rising awareness, obviously, now that the Epstein files are becoming a more discussed topic, and certainly a pretty incendiary topic right now in the US because of the delays of the release. There's a much larger public outrage and public awareness being raised. But at the same time, we're still battling against a very mechanistic system of institutionalized information, the way in which they try and dissuade people from looking into these subjects by putting the label of alt-right conspiracy theories. And, you know, these types of buzzwords are used to try and de-escalate the importance of the issue. But certainly this issue needs to be discussed. And I'm very, very happy to hear that you're, you know, willing to come out and speak for people who, like you said, are the voiceless. And there are many in that situation. You kind of touched on it briefly, but Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell have both been linked to Israel. What do you think of the claims that Epstein and Maxwell were working on behalf of Mossad, Israeli intelligence, perhaps as well Western intelligence, as an asset that was embedded essentially into Western high society for the purposes of gathering evidence against key influences, primarily, it would seem, through sexual blackmail? Is that something that you think is likely?
Very likely. I mean, these criminals have many branches to their organizations. And we've also got to realize that the Maxwells used to own the media. You know, in England, yeah. They own the media. So when someone owns the media, they can very much control about what's being put out there. And for instance, you know, I haven't been able to speak out in the mainstream media about what happened to me, and neither have many other Epstein victims. Where are the other 250 Epstein victims? Where are they? And let me tell you that some of them have been found dead. Like Carolyn, one of the main Epstein victims, she testified against Ghislaine Maxwell. There were only three girls who testified against Maxwell. Carolyn was found dead. And you know what? The media wouldn't put it there. The only reason it was put there was because another Epstein victim made sure it was put there. And they blamed her for the investigation being ruined. And it's not her fault, because people should know. when someone who's testified in a case like this has been found dead, it took them 6 months to put it there. And it's only thanks to Kate Bricklett from the Daily Beast. She's an amazing journalist. She's the only woman who's actually ever written my full story as well. Because what they do is they always leave out Clinton's name, just like conveniently his name's left out. Apparently they leave it out because it distracts from the emotional impact. Well, if you ask me, I would like their name involved, considering all the deaths involved in their administration.
Did you see Clinton behaving in any way that would be untoward? Did you see him in any compromising situations?
No, but you know, the only weird thing is when I met him, you know, because these people are very clever. And when I met him, he held onto my hand for like over a minute, you know, like I said, "Hi, nice to meet you." And then he shook my hand, and then he held onto my hand and kept talking to someone behind him, and he just held onto my hand for like, you know, a good like 2 minutes. He just sat there holding onto my hand. Well, he was standing, actually. He stood there holding onto my hand and just talking to someone. And I always found that a bit weird, because I've never had someone do that, where they hold your hand and then they start talking. You know, when you go, "Nice to meet you," and it's like they won't let go of your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I was...
No, it's very, very intrusive and assumptive and
it was
possessive.
Very odd. But, you know, I only saw him in South Africa. I didn't see him on the island or anything. But, you know, I think we've realized that there's a lot more going on here. I mean, I was also taken to Bill Richardson's mansion in New Mexico. And him and the vice governor came out and they looked me and the other girl up and down. It was like they were having a meeting and then they went back inside. And, you know, another thing, it's weird that I'm mentioning him when I'm mentioning them, because a weird smell came out of that room. And I smelled the same weird smell at the hotel at the Cape Grace when Clinton, because it looked like Clinton and Epstein were actually sharing a hotel suite, as far as it looked like, because he went into one room and, you know, he walked through where I was doing the interview. And I smelled this weird, horrible smell come out there. And I smelled the same smell by the governor of the New Mexico's house. And I thought it smelled like feces and urine. But one of my friends said, "Juliet, geez, this sounds like it could be the smell of a dead body." But, you know, I don't know. But it was just like, I've never smelled a smell like that before. And it was very creepy. And it was also disguised with cleaning chemicals. But I could smell it.
Well, there is... There is a lot of evidence that certain sectors of high society are deeply invested in occult practices, ancient esoteric belief systems, and unfortunately, plenty of evidence has accumulated over the years in the form of, primarily overwhelming amounts of testimony that speak to the dark reality of ritual sacrifice, the practice of black magic in elite circles. During this period in your life, did you witness anything that, you know, you would consider to be suggestive of these types of practices?
I think if I'd witnessed any of it consciously, I would be dead by now. They don't let people see things like that and get away. But I
and survive.
And yeah. Also, when I was speaking about when me and the other girl were taken to Bill Richardson's mansion with Epstein, I think that, you know, what I've come to realize is that they might have been taking our eggs. So maybe he was taking us and showing us to him for the egg sale. I mean, I don't know, like, but that's just the only thing that could really explain it to me, because why did these people come out and look me up and down and then go into a big room for a meeting? You know, why did Epstein take us there? It was myself and Tila Davies. You know, I don't like to name names, but, well, she's a victim, very much a victim. But, you know, she hasn't spoken out much, because I think a lot of American victims are actually frightened to speak out, because the FBI, you know, Epstein told me he worked at CIA. I've also had weird stuff at the FBI. They wanted to fly me there and interview me. They were going to arrange first-class hotels, first-class flights. And then suddenly my child's father didn't want us traveling. And then, because, you know, we split up and he wouldn't let us travel. So then they didn't want to interview me anymore. They never took my statement. And they also promised victim therapy. This was years ago. And all of the, and they just ignored my emails. After, like, pushing for me to get there, they got us emergency visas. And then they ignored my emails because they can't get me there in person.
It is concerning, just based on the current optics of the FBI, and it seems like they're stonewalling a lot of the release of these documents and trying their best to keep this from coming out into the public. So, you know, offering you this olive branch of security and protection and freedom seems more like a ruse to get you into the States, because then obviously you're under their jurisdiction, you're under their control, you're under their influence, and the fact that they've never followed up with you again to try and convince you that this is a good move for you and your family and your safety is quite suspicious as well. So I would agree with you that it was probably an ulterior motive.
They outright ignored me. Like, I was having terrible nightmares, you know. I was emailing them. I was like, please help. You know, please provide victim therapy for me and the other girls. I was going through a horrible time with it all. But they outright ignored me. And I've got all the proof on email evidence. And you know what's another weird thing is, you know, they say that Epstein's emails are disappearing. Emails that Epstein sent me have disappeared from my email. Just gone. Gone. Yeah. So they are definitely deleting stuff. It's very creepy. And sorry, going back to the question of the occult, you know, like I said, if I would have seen anything like that, I would have probably been knocked off. You know, that's the frightening thing, is also why my name wasn't on the flight log. And, you know, like I said, they have many branches to their organizations. But what one starts to realize is there must be something underneath that island, because the accommodation wasn't suitable for all the celebrities that apparently went there. You know, like they say, like Oprah went there, and, you know, they got all the names on the flight log. But where were they staying? Because I never even saw Epstein's main bedroom. Do you know that? He only took me into a weird side room in the dark. I never saw his main bedroom in the big balcony. I only saw it on the, when they did like a drone footage, you know, of it. That's like, oh God, he had a whole nother bedroom that I never saw it, because I was taken into this other bedroom in the day.
Well, this is a bit of a disturbing thing as well, because I posted about this recently. I've actually forgotten the name of the man. You might know who it is, who's now purchased Little St. James Island, but he's planning to build a resort complex on this island, and no forensic investigation of the ground has been done. They haven't done excavations for any sort of buried evidence, and that will never happen now, because they're building apparently an apartment resort complex. I mean, who would want to stay at a five-star resort on Epstein's Island? I don't know. But the fact that they're doing this to me suggests that there is a lot underneath that island that would absolutely reinforce the types of things that you're suspicious of, and that's never going to see the light of day.
Well, also, where Epstein lived in New York on 71st and 5th, Bill Cosby lived like across the road, the other sex predator who was prison.
Right.
Woody Allen lived pretty much nearby. Maybe there's something underneath there too. Why do all these people live in the same area? You know, there's a lot of weird stuff. And also in New Mexico, it's quite clear that it seems like there's something underneath there.
Yeah.
And also, you know, you've got, it's directly in between Roswell and Dulce base, you know, where a lot of weird things have happened. And, you know, there's just too much evidence on it. And I saw a UFO when I was there, you know, outside at New Mexico. I went to have a cigarette and I saw a weird, like, lights flying. And then I had the weird thing waking up in the lab. And, you know, it's so creepy because I can't place when that happened. But I know it happened.
Yeah, let's talk about that. So waking up in a lab, this was not on the island. This was in New Mexico.
On the island, I saw him shapeshift.
Okay.
In the bedroom.
Let's talk about that first, and then we'll touch on this lab experience as well. So can you explain what you mean by shapeshifting here?
Well, when I was in the bedroom with him, because he used to take me into that small bedroom, and it was always dark and really cold. And then it was almost like when he was orgasming or something. Like, I looked at him and suddenly his face like grew like big like this. And then I saw these huge black eyes like this. And then a big mouth with this horrible tongue and like this sort of dragon horn stuff, which is like almost like the devil. Or, you know, I mean, I can't explain really what I saw, because I saw like, I mean, I can explain it, but it's like so hard. I did paint it, but I burnt that painting because I just hated it. But I can paint it again. But I just, you know, I saw him turn into this horrible, creepy thing. And I wasn't on drugs. I wasn't drinking alcohol. Nothing like that was allowed. You know, like a lot of people think there were parties going on there. There weren't any parties. There was no alcohol. Absolutely not allowed. Like, you know, I smoked, but I had to smoke far away, you know, and hide. And I had to wash my hands after smoking. And they were very fanatical. They did not like things like that. But I, you know, I could have been drugged. I don't know, you know, because again, when you're in a place like that, they could slip something in your drink, you know, in your water or in your food. You just never know.
I mean, it could also be psychic, like psychological trauma projection. You know, have you thought about that? You know, the human brain can create so many different things in traumatic scenarios.
It could be that. But let's get to blood types now. You wanted to ask about blood types. It's the perfect timing for it. You get Rh negatives. Okay. There are different people on earth here. Okay. It's actually very dangerous for an Rh negative woman to have a child with an Rh positive man. But they don't tell us it. They hide it from us. Because guess what? Most of the American presidents, Rh negative, royal family, all Rh negative. You know the story of the blue blood. Well, apparently what it comes down to, I don't know exactly much. I'm not a scientist, you know, but I have done a research. And it comes down to the Garden of Eden. You know, when Eve took the apple from the snake, apparently she actually mated with the snake. So it was interbreeding with its genetic. You know, you can look into Nephilims. There's a lot of, you know, stuff about this. You know, it's very, very strange because there's other weird things with the Rh negative is two Rh negative people can only have an Rh negative child. For instance, my child's father is an Rh negative. So my child's Rh negative. It's very unusual to find an Rh negative person, actually. But both my parents are Rh positive, and then suddenly an Rh negative can come out. So the whole bloodline thing. So now let me get back to the dragon and everything. Okay. So when you go to Basque, okay, Basque, 25 to 35% of people in Basque are Rh negative, but mostly around the world, only about 6% are Rh negative. Like for instance, if someone goes to Thailand and they have an accident and they're an Rh negative, it's like a death sentence. They don't have Rh negative blood there. It's a very specific blood that comes from a very specific place. And what they're saying is it's actually the hidden Hebrews, or I mean, I don't really, you know, again, I'm still.
Well, it gets into like the Sumerian story, the Anunnaki, the old god kingdom, that type of genetic bloodline and the preservation of that through the European royal families and the bloodlines and such.
And let me tell you that Elon Musk is apparently Rh negative. Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Cruise, the list goes on. I did a lot of research, you know, even Jimi Hendrix, like, the Beatles, like most of them, they're Rh negatives. So most people are Rh positive. Everyone in my family is Rh positive, you know, as far as I know. Like my mum, my dad, my one brother, I don't know my other brother. But, you know, type, he hasn't tested. But, you know, I think people need to test their blood types because you'll find that Rh negative people are often more troubled. They're more likely to smoke and drink because they don't like the state of the world as it is. It distresses them. So anyway, let's go back to Basque, okay? So 25 to 35% of the people in Basque are apparently Rh negative. Then you get St. Michael slaying the dragon. You know, St. Michael, the saint, you know, people must do research on him. He's amazing, apparently a real person from the 1500s. Then you get Joan of Arc, also slaying dragons. You know, and she was one of the witches that they burned 1430. They started burning the witches in England. 1497, Bonfire of the Vanities, they burnt all the books. But they didn't burn them all. They actually stole them and put them under the Vatican, I think. I mean, I don't know this for a fact. I wouldn't want to get sued for saying that. But
I think that there's a lot to be looked into here, and especially when it comes to the preservation of these bloodlines. I have some friends who are within that world of higher society and have, you know, familial connections to these types of bloodlines, and they agree that there is certainly a protected class within that upper tier that considers themselves ancestrally ordained to rule, you know, that they have this bloodline right to be who they are now at the top tier of the world. And I think we are dealing with that. Whether it leads directly back to non-human engineering, I'm not sure, but that's certainly something that I also think is worth consideration. And it's something that people are beginning to try and actually understand and talk about a bit more, the idea that maybe we have been engineered at some point in our human story.
There's a whole lot of stuff that's been like sort of hidden from us. And when you actually have time to sit and think and analyze, you start to realize, whoa, what kind of a world are we living in?
Highlighting the world that you came through as well in relation to the modeling, do you think that the modeling industry itself is in a way a form of a front that allows this deeper network of trafficking and abuse to take place? In other words, is the surface level modeling world just a useful tool generating a larger trafficking market underneath it?
Well, definitely, especially when they take calls when they're very young. You know, I know a lot of girls who've done modeling, and I don't know many girls who've made a lot of money from modeling at the end of the day. You know, they make money here and there, but very much they get targeted by rich men and horrible situations. And I think that I don't think girls should be allowed to do modeling until they're at least 18 years age, because they tried to come and take me, elite models. They found me at a market in Cape Town when I was 14. I've got the newspaper clip from it. But my mum wouldn't let me go. And, you know, the thing is, a lot of people, like, they, you know, they need money and they send their young girls. And I think it's very dangerous to send a young girl overseas. It's someone that doesn't have business experience. And also, if anyone is going overseas, you know, this is what, with Epstein, I should have actually asked for a contract. But you see, I was very young and I didn't understand things like that. You know, I should have had a modeling, you know, I just believed that they worked for Victoria's Secret. I did the modeling casting for Karen Models. So it seemed all legitimate, but I should have actually had a contract in writing from them. But, you know, I was too young to understand that. So I think if girls go overseas, they must have a chaperone and they must have a contract and they should also get a down payment before they go. You know, to make sure that they're going to be safe and to, you know, have a lawyer check the contract also. You know, pay a little bit of money to a lawyer so you've got extra help on the side.
Now you mentioned waking up in a lab environment. Can you just detail what this was? Where was this?
Well, when I was taken to New Mexico, you know, I saw the UFO there. It was very creepy. Well, it must have been, it was like these three lights in the sky. And then sometime around that time, I just woke up in a laboratory and I was naked and paralyzed on a table. And there were six people in hazmat suits around me. And then there was like a female doctor standing behind my head. And I couldn't move and I couldn't talk, but my eyes could move. And sorry, it's actually really hard to even talking about that because, you know, I had such bad panic. Sorry, Jay. But, you know, I went back to that sort of time recently and it's just like, it was something so frightening that I can't really explain it, but I know that it happened. And, you know, then the doctor came near my head and she said, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. And then I suddenly just went out again. But, you know, there wasn't like doctor's apparatus in there. There was just like a big like metal slate on top of me, like a door size thing on top of me. And it was just like a very, very frightening thing, you know, to happen.
What were you in New Mexico for at that time?
He just kept flying me back there all the time. You know, I was just like so broken from the whole thing. And it was almost like he was like, I suppose he almost had like a bit of a cult in a way, you know, where he was like controlling people. And
so this is in his ranch, because he had a ranch in New Mexico, right?
I mean, I got taken to New Mexico, to New York, to Paris, to Palm Beach, to the island. I got taken to all the properties. Because the thing is, after being taken somewhere like that, it was almost like you just, you know, it really affected me very badly being a young person.
You disassociate.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't get paid money because I think a lot of people did get paid a lot of money from him. Like he offered me $2,000 for any girl I bought there. And he said if I work for him, he'd give me $4,000 a month. But I never did any of that, you know, because I missed my family and I used to cry and I just sort of fell to pieces. You know, I think he realized I wasn't the sort of person that was up for it all. You know, I don't know.
How did you get out?
Well, I guess eventually I actually started putting on weight because I knew he didn't like things like that. I also became badly bulimic and I just became like more sort of like cheeky, not cheeky, but like I was like, I just didn't do, like, I suppose I wasn't, like, getting, he wanted me to find girls for him and stuff, and I wouldn't do any of that, so I guess I was not useful to him, and then he let me go. Because before, he always used to phone all the time, and it was like he had a horrible hook, you know, into me. Like, you know, I was terrified because I thought he ran the world, and
yeah,
I just thought it was better to be on his good side. You know, and after what had happened, like, I didn't even realize that I'd been raped, actually, because, you know, it's just, like, such a shock, one, like, being taken by people like that. And, you know, also coming from a place like Africa where people have, like, you know, there's some serious brutal rapes out here. You know, and it was, like, a different sort of rape of just, like, manipulation and having, you know, obviously being raped, but it was just something I couldn't actually talk about, you know? I just didn't want to admit it. I didn't even want to accept it. What had happened.
How do you... Sorry, please, don't let me interrupt you.
I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah.
I really appreciate you speaking like this, and it's, I'm sure it's extremely hard. we won't take much longer. Just a couple more questions, and we'll wrap up. We will probably have to do a longer conversation at some point, just to get into the esoteric and the bloodlines, and you know, really into some of the research that you've been doing over the years since this. But I would like to get your opinion on how this is all being handled right now by the Trump administration.
Hope. People have hope.
Yeah.
You know, people have been very badly lied to, and it's one thing to lie to one person. It's another thing to lie to millions of people. I don't think they're going to be releasing anything. You know, even on Twitter, you know, and X now, I've been blocked like a few times. They just like take my account away. I had another account with 10,000 followers and just blocked, bam. You know, so I don't think they want any truth coming out. I think they're basically the lesser of two evils, or hopefully not the worst of two evils. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I just think that more truth should come out. But, you know, they don't want people knowing the truth. They want to keep the people as sheeple. They want to keep the people mind-controlled. They don't want people knowing. And also what I've thought about is, if people knew the truth, you know, if the cloning and everything is real, like, you know, as far as Bill Clinton banned human cloning in 97, we didn't go into the whole cloning thing because, you know...
It's okay. We can come back on these another time, because I know you don't have much time today, but that's another thread with this.
I'll explain it quick. Okay, because if they were taking eggs, they've got underground laboratories, right? So then 1996, they cloned Dolly the sheep. They cloned a sheep. 1997, Bill Clinton banned human cloning. Why does he ban... Are the federal funds used for human cloning? Use of federal funds for human cloning. And then apparently in 2002, they cloned the first baby Eve in December. So, right, I'm taken there in September. I think they've taken my eggs. They clone a baby in 2002. No one ever hears about anything again. It's all on 60 Minutes or BBC, one of those things. They were all talking about when a human's going to be cloned. Suddenly it's shut down. You know, so there's a lot more going on here. And they don't want people knowing about it. You know, that's what I'm saying is that as far as releasing, you know, people are saying release the list. The list has been released. We've seen all the names on the list. What about releasing the information and, you know, of what's actually been going on? But the problem is if they release information, it's going to break people's minds. It'll bend their brains. A lot of people won't be able to handle it. So I suppose that's why they don't know what to do. Because if they release the truth, all hell will break loose.
Yeah, because it seems to represent the concrete, the cement of the actual system itself. It holds the system together in the way that it's operating in the modern era. The corruption, the blackmail, the necessary levels of information bargaining that seems to be taking place. The only thing we can do is raise awareness. And Juliet, I mean, I want to thank you just for being so brave to even get on and speak to me about this and be upfront and to put your message out. So I know we don't have a whole lot of time. I'd love to reconvene. I'd love to have a longer talk with you at some point. But I just want to just say thank you so much sincerely from the bottom of my heart for you coming and speaking to me today. I really appreciate it. And I know that everyone listening deeply appreciates it as well.
Let me just tell you the only thing I need to research more about rites of passage, but the one thing I did look into and I've always thought about is Rumpelstiltskin. Give me your firstborn, I'll give you power and glory. So do you know how many of these people have lost their firstborn child? Elon Musk, he lost his first child. Oprah lost her first child. Jerry Lee Lewis lost his first child. Bill Cosby lost a child. The Rothschilds lost a child. The Maxwells lost their first son. Mike Tyson lost his child. Anne Nicole Smith lost a child. John Travolta lost a child. Keanu Reeves lost a child. Prince lost a child. The Kennedys lost their son. And also in South Africa, two of the wealthiest families here also lost their sons.
That also links, and maybe if you're not familiar with this, there can be something that you research as well, because I believe this ties the ancient Canaanite traditions of Baal or Moloch, a Canaanite idol, and they would give their firstborn to this idol, and it was a furnace. They would literally construct a bull-shaped furnace and put the firstborn in there, and that's one of the big threads leading towards modern-day elite practices of this type of stuff, that it's a modern-day Canaanite religion, essentially.